acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 161, Knitting's Other Side. Sunday, March 19th, 2017. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Each week, I post show notes with photographs and links to the things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode features the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, ever-expanding skill set, and off the shelf. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of Yarns at Yin Hu. It's very early Sunday morning, and already there's a bit of warming temperatures because I see icicles dripping and snow melting from the roof here at the studio. So hopefully today we'll have some warm weather, some snow melt, and it will seem to be a little more spring-like. Yesterday, I released a new pattern design. It's called Braided Berry Hat and Mitts. It's a pattern for a hat with a split brim and mitts with a split cuff. And both the brim and the cuff feature a really densely textured, beautiful motif that looks like berries and braids running in between them. It's somewhat of a challenging motif to knit. It's knit back and forth, so there are purl rows and a little bit of intermediate level stitches. But then the hat and the mitts are joined to knit in the round, and the majority of the knitting is in stockinette. And the hat finishes with a little bit more texture in the crown decreases. And it also has some I-cord strings and really fun pom-poms, if you choose to add them, which I think give it a really spirited spring look. Both the hat and mitts are knit in DK weight yarn. And the yarn for this pattern is from Distal Fink Fiber Company. You may have heard me mention Megan of Distal Fink before. She dyed just some gorgeous purple-gray yarn. It's the kind of color that can look very different in different types of lighting, but I just thought it was begging for a really textured portion of a design. So you could see light and shadow, and you could see that yarn working up in a texture. And so that inspired me to create this design for a hat and mitts set. Megan of Distal Fink Fiber Company is vending. She was vending yesterday and today at a festival called For the Love of Fiber. That is at the Match Factory in Bellefonte, PA. I will be visiting the Steel City Fiber Festival, where she will be vending, on April 8th and 9th. I'm not sure of my exact travel plans yet, but I would very much like to see her and her mom, who vends the Mulberry Hill. They have farm yarns, rug hooking, quite a nice variety of products, and a beautiful, beautiful booth. When I visited the Steel City Fiber Festival and met Megan and her mom, Colleen, last year, theirs was hands down the most charming booth at the festival. And so I'm looking forward to seeing them both again and sampling maybe some other of the yarns she has. She's dyeing some, and that, like I said, they're also doing some farm yarns this season as well. So once again, that's the Braided Berry Hat and Mitts set. It's a pattern set available on Ravelry. And as always, your purchase or a purchase for a friend who you may think would like the design is a great way to support the Yarns at Yinhu podcast. If you are able to visit Megan of Distal Fink Fiber at any of the festivals where she's vending this season, you can purchase a paper copy of the Braided Berry Hat and Mitts set from her. And Megan will be collecting Ravelry names of folks who purchase. She'll give them to me, and then I will gift you the digital copy online. Any mention of a new pattern release would be incomplete without thanking the wonderful folks who test knit the designs while I was finalizing the pattern. So thank you very much to Saratoga Knitting, Out of This World, Hockey Rachel, and BR7394 for your kindness and your patience in test knitting. There's a little gift winging its way to you right now if you haven't received it already. The Back Porch. The most recent issue of Taproot Magazine has just an incredible selection of projects and recipes. So many things that I want to work on. It was difficult to decide where to begin. I did start to amass some ingredients to make the bitters recipes. And I also undertook the Three French Hens pattern by Susan B. Anderson. I'm not one to make a lot of toys, and it's challenging to make small knitted items. I typically reserve that kind of energy just for the holiday ornaments that I make, and I don't have a lot of small children in my life, so I'm not in the habit of making toys. But these French hens just really spoke to me. It looks like they're wearing little sweaters. And I thought it would be the perfect way to use up some of the fingering weight yarn that I had for various stranded knitting projects that I've been working on recently. So I found Susan B. Anderson's pattern writing to be very clear and very specific. I think it's important when you're making something cute that you have sufficient directions to really replicate the exact look that you see in the photographs. There's a fine line between cute and really odd looking if you don't execute the directions accurately. And Susan B. Anderson really does a fine job of coaching you along so that your finished project looks like the one you see in the photograph. And even though I made different color choices than I saw in the magazine, I am very, very pleased with the way my three French hens turned out. I did use poly beads and polyfill to fill them because I just happened to have some of that lying around. It's not something I would go out and purchase because I think regular beans and some washed wool or some comb top do a great job inside of a little toy. And I will also say that a small thing does not mean it will be a quick knit. Even though it's pretty seamless construction and you're not knitting separate things and sewing them together, it's still time consuming to work on stitch counts and to choose colors and switch colors and follow the pattern directions for a small object like that. I found that it took quite a bit more time than I anticipated to make them, but the result is totally worth it. The pattern calls for using US size 2 needles. I used my US size 1 signature needles, which was an excellent choice and kept me motivated during the knitting. And I'm also pretty pleased with my color selections. So I will certainly post some photographs on my project page and also in the show notes for these 3 French hens. Once again, that's 3 French hens, a pattern designed by Susan B. Anderson. It appears in issue 21 of Taproot magazine. And there's a note that says within 6 months' time, this will be available as a separate pattern purchase on Ravelry. The front porch. I've been knitting on a new project for a while, but I haven't spoken about it yet on the podcast. It's the Overlap Shoulder Vest and Harimaki. It's a design release by Fibercraft Studio, and it was my parting purchase when I completed my second year of the Sheep to Shawl course, and we had our final class of the year in December of 2016. I knew that I wanted to make a purchase of a pattern and yarn that I could knit this year as a way of reflecting on all of the learning and all of the friendships I made as a result of the Sheep to Shawl course. But it took me a very long time to decide exactly what I wanted to knit because I visited Fibercraft Studio more than 20 times over the course of 2 years, and I've seen all of their beautiful yarns and patterns at festivals. It was really a case of too many options. But I finally decided on this overlap shoulder vest and harimaki. The vest is knitted lengthwise from side to side, and I think that is a way to show off the beauty of the yarn that I chose, which is a 50-50 wool alpaca blend, and mine is dyed with indigo and Brazil wood. So it has some beautiful pinks and purples, just some incredible variations in muted, gorgeous color. The vest is rather cropped, and underneath is a harimaki, which translates very literally into belly band. This was traditionally a type of undergarment, but is now more of a fashion statement. And it looks like the sweater is very loose with a very tight waistband, but it's actually 2 different pieces put together. So I'm knitting the vest first, and then I will see how much yarn I have left over for the harimaki. This is absolutely gorgeous knitting. I'm using US size 9 needles, though the pattern directions call for 10.5, but I really like the fabric that I have on the US 9s. And I tend to be a bit of a loose knitter, so I think this will work out perfectly. The pattern directions are more of a recipe than a row-by-row pattern to follow, but I'm doing pretty well. It has inspired me to do a gauge swatch and to be more precise and careful about calculating gauge. And you knit the back and the front kind of separately with stitches being held. And there's a really interesting little twist and picking up of stitches that you do to get the look of this folded over front for the arms. I'm not exactly sure how it's going to work out, but I'm just trusting the pattern and keep knitting. That's the wisdom that I'm going with for this knitting. Unfortunately, Fibercraft Studio does not put their patterns for view or for sale on Ravelry. So it's a little bit difficult to create a pattern page for this, but I will do my best to take a photo of the picture on the pattern and some photos of my work in progress to show you how it's going. Ever-expanding skill set. I've been having a great time in the kitchen with sauces so far this month. We're making sauces during the month of March for hashtag Power Pantry. And this past week, I made an incredibly vibrant green sauce using fresh spinach, frozen peas, and walnuts with some salt and some olive oil and a little bit of leftover pasta water to thin it out. To me, this kind of a sauce is a pesto sauce. I'm not sure where it would fit in terms of the five mother sauces of French cooking, but it's just a quick and delicious sauce for a meal. The recipe was recommended by Maggie of Maggie's Corner, and I think it's a great recipe in itself, and it also kind of begs for variations as well. I put it over pasta, and I had very little pasta left in my pantry. For some reason, I've been remiss with my purchases lately. So I had a lot of sauce and a little pasta, and I froze the remainder of the sauce. I frequently use the freezing method to freeze pesto sauce I make with basil, and it's a great technique because basil doesn't last very long, but the frozen pesto sauce lasts very nicely in the freezer. So I think freezing this pesto sauce made with spinach and the peas will also do well and not lose any, or not lose much, I suppose, of its vibrant green quality or its nutritional value by being frozen. And I like having frozen things on hand for quick weeknight meals when I don't have a lot of time. So maybe I'll see that resuscitated sometime this week. But I also have plans to make a curry sauce this evening and maybe a bechamel sauce with cheese for later in the week. One of my go-to weeknight meals is a baked potato with some steamed vegetables and either just grated cheese or a cheese sauce. So I think a bechamel sauce with some leftover grated cheese would be a great idea for a weeknight dinner this evening. You can also add just a small amount of protein, some leftover something or other that you happen to have in the fridge. And I like the idea of a bechamel sauce with cheese for using cheese that's not at its prime and not great for eating right out of hand or on crackers or something like that. So sauces are a good way to incorporate some leftover items that may be of very high quality or very expensive in your fridge, but you don't have a lot of them. So a great way to make them part of your meal is to put them into a sauce. Off the shelf. This week, I'd like to talk to you about two books that have recently made their way to my bedside table and which I will be slowly reading and savoring over the next couple of months. The first is a title I'm pretty sure you've heard of if you watch or listen to other knitting podcasts, because some of my favorite podcasters have been mentioning this book recently. It's Women's Work, The First 20,000 Years by Elizabeth Wayland Barber. I just got this book in the mail this week after hearing about it from Meadow of the Woven Road podcast and some others. And in the preface, I learned that the author came to this topic and this study because she is the daughter of someone who liked to weave and sew and work with textiles. And so Elizabeth Wayland Barber learned how to sew and weave and work with textiles at a very early age. when she went to college and was majoring in Mediterranean archaeology of the Classical Age and the Bronze Age, I believe, she noticed that many of the patterns on pottery and other kinds of things, durable goods, were reminiscent of some textile designs. That was her thinking, that the designs on pottery and the designs on walls and other things that were recovered from digs were actually inspired by what had come first on textiles. When she suggested this to her professors and experts in the field, her ideas were dismissed. There was no way, she was told, that sophisticated textiles could have been in existence so early. But the thought just wouldn't leave her mind. So she devoted some time to doing some research, and gradually over time, this book and the research supporting these ideas in the book were developed. And so I think it's going to be a really interesting way to learn a little bit more about textiles and the everyday lives of women, and also what this means to economy. One of the problems with all of this research is that the things that women historically have created are not very durable. The cooking, the textiles, all of these things disintegrate very quickly, except in the cases of very specially preserved or accidents of history where things end up being preserved that would normally rot or burn or melt away. And so I think the ephemeral nature of all of this is part of its magic and its importance. And it's a really interesting thing to think about in terms of the women's movement and the resistance that's happening now and some of the challenges that women have, is that things they've historically been involved with are maybe more meaningful but less durable in a lot of ways. So I think there's some interesting political context to this as well, and I'm going to have a lot of fun reading it. It's a dense, well-researched book. There are maps, drawings, some graphics, and a lot of intersection with history that maybe I already know, but I don't know it from this perspective. The second book is a new book, newly available in the US. And this book is a gift from listener Amy, who messaged me a while ago asking me if I would like a copy. I said, yes, of course, and then just forgot about it, and it arrived in my mailbox this week. It's the Mindfulness in Knitting book, Meditations on Craft and Calm by Rachel Matthews. And I am going to enjoy this book for its own merit, and also because I am currently enrolled in a 6-week online course on mindfulness. The course is sponsored by Mindful Schools Organization, and I am taking it through my school because there has been a rise recently in stress and anxiety in young people, and they don't seem to have adequate tools to deal with stress and anxiety or cope with difficult situations as they come along. They seem to be incapacitated by everyday stress and anxiety. And if they just had some simple tools, this is my reasoning, if they had some simple tools like knowing how to just focus on your breathing to calm yourself down, to keep yourself from falling into mind traps or traps of thinking that are kind of like a downward spiral, they would fare much better and they would have a much better everyday quality of life than if they let stress and anxiety overwhelm them. So this book by Rachel Matthews focuses primarily on mindfulness in terms of knitting and how knitting can be used to bring mindfulness about. I have been used to practicing mindfulness or meditations, I guess would be the more accurate term, with my spinning. So I think that this shift can help me really learn something and can help me expand my practice. In the beginning of the book, in the introduction, Rachel Matthews uses a very interesting analogy. She talks about the other side of our knitting. She says, many of us may have experienced knitters admiring our intarsia, our color work, and then cheekily looking on the other side to see how messy our tram lines are, or rudely running a thumb over our seams to check the neatness of our Kitchener stitches. Mindful knitting confidently takes our other side to a deeper and more insightful place. Through all the mindful work we are able to accomplish while knitting, the other sides of ourselves become quietly ordered. I think this is just a beautiful analogy, and I think it's a great analogy for knitting because it's a visual analogy that you have this gorgeous color work. For me, the stranded color work I've been doing recently is a great example. And you admire it from the front, from the public side of the work, and then you turn it over to look at the inside. And that tells the story of the process of your knitting. It can tell a little bit of the confidence or the experience in your knitting. And for this to be quietly ordered, I think that's such a peaceful, confident thing. And something to which I definitely aspire in terms of my own mindful journey. So thank you, Amy, for the gift of this book. I will be reading it and perhaps sharing some of the insights that I find in the book on the podcast over coming weeks and months.
Acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves lay down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a sweet nature, sweet nature thing. It's a it's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. The theme song for this episode is So Wheat, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, recorded by Bovine Social Club. If you enjoy this episode, I hope you'll consider joining the Ravelry group or the Facebook page, following me on social media, or leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Each week, I post show notes, links, and photographs of the things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing.
It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing.